Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Wir bei Vertex wissen, dass die Geschwindigkeit des globalen Handels zunimmt, was eine Steuerverwaltung komplexer macht. Und ihre unternehmenseigenen Systeme sind nicht dafür ausgelegt, diese Steuerkomplexität zu bewältigen. Hier setzen wir mit unserer Plattform an, die Continuous Compliance ermöglicht. So erhalten Sie mehr Transparenz, mehr Genauigkeit und mehr Vertrauen in Ihre Steuerdaten. Sie wollen mehr über Continuous Compliance erfahren? Dann besuchen Sie vertexinc.com/de.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Namaste, I'm Devina Gupta. And on this edition, we will be talking about those protests in Kenya in a moment. And heading to Zambia, which is seeing one of the worst droughts in decades. From the US, we have a quick roundup of what to expect from the first US presidential debate that will be taking place later today. And have you heard of Webtoons? Well, that's a story to watch out for on World Business Report. So let's start with the news that we've been following closely over the last few days. Police have been firing tear gas and rubber bullets to break up small groups of protesters on the streets of Kenyan capital, Nairobi. On Wednesday, huge demonstrations forced President William Ruto to abandon his deeply unpopular bill, which would have brought in new taxes. One of the protesters, Michelle, who's also participating today, says that she doesn't believe it's the end for the bill.
It's not the first time he has given us empty promises. He did that before and nothing has happened. He just refused to sign the bill. So the bill is still on the table. It would still go back to Parliament. It is still there. So what he did yesterday was just a PR stunt to keep us quiet.
Meanwhile, Azam in Nairobi owns a printing business and told us this earlier.
It's been chaotic week, a lot of tension, a lot of unpredictability, but I guess everybody's kind of like going with the flow. Businesses, for the past 2 weeks, it's been slow. People have shut down most of their businesses, not knowing what will happen next. The government is really coming up with these new taxes and everything, disturbing the whole economy. But I guess in the short run, yeah, we are facing a lot of challenges. Businesses are closed down. A lot of workers can't come to work because of security issues.
So lots of upset over there. Young protesters, businesses, all seeing a chaos at the moment. Let's get the latest with our Deputy Africa Editor, Anne Soy, who's joining us. Anne, tell us about these protests today. They're on much smaller scale, as we understand, that have been so far this week.
Yes, much smaller scale, and the police, I have noticed, have been trying to manage them from far out of town compared to days ago when they managed to get as far as Parliament and actually broke into Parliament where MPs had just completed their sitting there. So yes, much smaller protests, but then we have seen some violent confrontations in different parts of the country and of the city. These reported looting in some areas. So it's degenerating into something other than what the original protesters had intended.
What about daily life and disruptions in most of Kenya? Are businesses shut or are Kenyans trying to return to normal life?
Yes, that's right. So today, businesses decided that they are not going to take any chances. And so most of them are shut. They did not know what they were expecting. So since last week, the protests have been largely peaceful from the protesters' side and very focused on the finance bill, which the government finally withdrew yesterday. But then we have a section of protesters who said despite the government's concession, they were still going to proceed with the protests, and they wanted to march to State House today, but then there was split. Another group said that they think it was not a good idea to march to State House, and so they were staying away. So it is evolving into something different, and it will be interesting to see in the coming days what it is going to mean.
And what are the options then for President Ruto? Because he has bowed down to the pressure from the protesters to withdraw those that contentious and controversial tax bill. But clearly, many of them are not convinced.
They are not convinced. But the thought at the moment is that when you listen to the analysts, there is still a lot of anger among people. And, you know, they're talking about corruption, mismanagement of government. They're talking about the opulence that people close to the president have been showing, you know, like buying expensive watches and shoes. And, you know, people have been analysing these things. And that is what has fueled the anger. However, there are fears now about what this is going to mean. How long can they continue with this, especially considering that they're not as focused as before, and we are beginning to see the group splitting and gangs taking advantage of that to come out and destroy businesses and loot.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Anne Soy, Deputy Africa Editor over there. You can also go to bbc.com for latest on that story. Now, let's go a bit south in Africa to Zambia. The country is facing one of the worst droughts in decades that is threatening hunger for millions of people, cutting off electricity for long periods of time and destroying its economy. Today, Zambia's annual inflation rate jumped to a 29-month high for the month of June. Consumer prices rose 15.2%, mainly because of higher costs of cornmeal, cereals and spirits. Now, Trevor Hambaye is a senior managing partner with Development Finance Associates and joins us from Lusaka. Trevor, thanks for joining us. Clearly, severe drought is to be blamed for a lot of this food supply that is leading to price rise at the moment. Just tell us how families are coping at the moment.
It's obviously a very difficult situation for a lot of families. The impact of the drought has meant that there are lots of prices that have been escalating due to the fact that the cost of business has actually gone up. That has been brought about by the long hours of load shedding, where we have got up to 12 hours of power cuts. This has been pushing the price. But secondly, as well, is that unfortunately, the country is import dependent, and a lot of the commodities that we do have are imported. And with the current situation that we have, the currency has been depreciating against major currencies, where we had more than 40% depreciation in the last 6 months.
So it is it's clearly a tough environment for many businesses. Are smaller ones running out of option? Because for them to keep going in these conditions must be extremely difficult.
It is extremely difficult. And generally speaking, I think for the smaller ones who are small and medium businesses is that they do not really have their capacity to be able to mitigate these external factors that are affecting their business operations, especially the power cuts. And they are really left with very little options other than to shut down, because the cost of having to maintain their businesses is beyond their capacity to maintain in the short term.
And then what happens to those employees who are dependent, especially in these kind of severe conditions, to get their wages and try and get their families' food on the table and get their life going?
It's a very difficult situation because the small and medium enterprise, basically, most of them are self-employed, and they also constitute the largest component of employment in the country. So essentially is that you find a lot of people actually going out of work in this short term while we're experiencing the challenges around power deficit. And there are very, very little options. And we are basically looking and hoping that government will be able to put in place a structure that provides them short-term relief.
Well, the government has said that recently given a $1.6 billion boost as a simultaneous budget. Also, the country has seen a bailout from the International Monetary Fund for meeting its requirement of funds. How far are these measures going?
Unfortunately, obviously, due to government bureaucracy around how these processes, how long these processes can take, it is not an immediate solution that is going to come. I know that government has put in place a supplementary budget to be able to provide to those mostly affected, especially the vulnerable groups that are below the poverty line, that they've doubled the amount that they're actually receiving in social cash transfer from the original one that they had, which was just slightly over $10, now is going to be around $20 to $25 on a monthly basis. That will also provide relief. But the businesses themselves is that the structure might come too late for them in terms of having to support some.
Trevor Hambaye, we leave it there, Senior Managing Partner of Development Finance Associates from Zambia. Now, in the U.S., the first debate between the presumptive presidential nominees, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, takes place tonight. Although the election is still more than 4 months away, it's already been quite a heated campaign. The debate is taking place in Atlanta in Georgia, and we've been to a musical festival in the nearby city of Athens to find out what people want to hear from the candidates and their thoughts on the economy in the U.S. right now.
FS 2024, day two. How are you guys doing? Yes, we are all a little more sunburned, a little more dehydrated today, but thank you so much for being here.
My name is Andrew Teets. I am 54 years old, and I live in Braselton, Georgia. I will not watch it. I'll probably get the information through online news sources. I just think it's going to be a lot of mudslinging. I just don't want to hear it. Honest to God, I don't know if I'll even vote. I might vote independent this year because I think you got a criminal on one side, you got another guy who's clearly got cognitive issues, I think. You know, you need somebody a little younger, and let's get back to the 70s at least, you know.
Hi, my name is Brianna Reich. I'm 32 years old, and I'm registered to vote in Clark County, Georgia. As far as the election goes, I want them to explain how they're going to stabilize the economy, but also create an economy that gives my generation and younger generations a solid future, not just working until they die. Because I'm looking at it as I'm not going to be able to retire, and that's really unfortunate.
So my name is Clarence Lockett. I'm a trucker by trade. If you want to speak up for truckers, everybody want to... They want to go home and they want to make their money, you know. And when you're out 5 days on the road away from your family, we talk about that's very important. What are you bringing home when you come back from those 5 days? Can I go out and eat and enjoy a milkshake? I think that president's candidate has to ask, can I afford this $10 milkshake if you were a president, you know?
My name is Sydney Passmore. I was actually just talking to my friend about this the other day, that the overall chatter of the up-and-coming election has been very light this time around. And, like, I sometimes have to remind myself, oh, wow, it's an election year. It feels to me that people have been complaining about the economy no matter who the president is. So I've come to the conclusion that it probably isn't going to matter regardless who's president and what they may promise. It's always going to be an issue, a struggle, and a fight.
My name is Brandon Taylor. I'm 32, and I'm not registered to vote. I'm recently out of jail. I've never really typically had any problems trying to get a job, but for the past couple of years, it's been a little tough. I've been denied on almost all of my applications that I've put in, and I'm not used to it, so it's kind of got me spinning a little bit, wondering, like, you know, what's going on.
My name is Jennifer Payne. I'm 52 years old. Now, I'm really surprised people still say they're undecided. I mean, at this point, you should know. Just because Trump's already been president, we've had 4 years of Biden now. If someone were to ask me who I think is going to win, it's going to be a close race. And also, you know, depending on who wins, we survived 4 years of presidents that I haven't liked, and we've survived 4 years of presidents I have liked, so we'll see. No matter where we're going.
We were talking to people in Athens in Georgia with our reporter, Daniel McDonald. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now let's get a bit more on other financial stories in the news today with Emma Wall, Head of Investment Analysis and Research at Hargreaves Lansdown. Thanks, Emma, for joining us. Could we just start by talking about Walgreens, a major pharmacy chain in the United States that is seeing its stocks just dip to lowest level since 97? What's going on?
Yeah, the stock's fallen about 25% on opening today, and that is because they've announced plans to significantly restructure the business. So they have around 12,500 stores globally, around 8,500 of those are in the United States. And they say that they're going to cut 2,000 stores over the next couple of years, close them because they're underperforming. And they've already closed 2,000 locations over the last decade. So that shows you the challenge ahead. And it's because of discounters, rising costs, people going and buying their drugs, and consumer staples on Amazon, the like e-commerce, rather than walking in to drugstores as they used to in the US.
Yes, and as we talk, the stock has gone down by almost over 24% now. Emma, stay with us on the show. We have lots more to talk about. But to a story now that caught many of us by surprise in the newsroom.
The age of arrogance in 20. Go! Aisha Pervaz is a pants-wearing warrior princess whose sword is as sharp as her wit because she just won a 10-year-long war.
Now, if you're wondering what that is, a lot of us are wondering that as well. It is a webtoon. It's a word that I have learned today because essentially it's a Gen Z word because these are web comics from South Korea that have millions of followers around the world. And now a major Korean company in this space, Webtoon Entertainment, is filing to list on US Stock Exchange. Its shares are due to start trading on the Nasdaq Stock Exchange at $21 per share, which is the top end of their marketed range. So we connected with Jen Moon, Chief Correspondent for Arirang TV, a news channel in Seoul, for more.
Webtoons are online-only, mobile-friendly comics that are replacing paper-based or traditional comics. The business has seen explosive growth around the world since the format emerged around 20 years ago here in South Korea. Naver's Webtoon subsidiary, it's one of, if not the biggest Webtoon company here in Korea. It's, of course, being enlisted in the U.S. stock market exchange. If I can give you a little example, 14 original South Korean dramas that were launched by Netflix last year, at least 7 were based on webtoons.
But just to get it right, most of these webtoons are free for users.
Yeah.
And where is the company making money from then?
Webtoon platform's domestic revenue initially relied on transaction volume or options to purchase unreleased webtoon episodes, which is a unique trait about webtoons was that ongoing projects were uploaded only a few times a week. But if users want to get a peek into additional episodes, they could do it by paying through digital currencies. Now, production studios and writers soon discovered that webtoon content was a treasure trove of IPs that was full of interesting plots, characters, and colorful artwork that they could utilize for their TV series or films. So not only do these webtoons come with the full package, but they also come with a surprisingly committed fandom who are curious to see how their favorite stories are brought to the screen.
But is the company profitable?
As of the end of last year, they did have a deficit of $363 million, but they did post their first ever net profit during the first quarter of this year by reducing costs ahead of the IPO. And because of their rapid growth in recent periods and with their partnership and adaptation of their contents in the Netflix series and whatnot, they do expect profits in the years ahead.
Then why is it because of this popularity that Naver is now seeking to raise over $300 million through this US listing?
The company aims to become what is called in Asia's Disney, helping creators introduce their IPs globally. So they plan to use the IP market, providing a platform and attracting investment and evolving into an intellectual property powerhouse. They want to become a worldwide pioneer in this field, and that's why they're going global.
What we are also seeing is interest from BlackRock, which is one of the largest asset management companies in the world, and it has said it could take up to $50 million in shares once Naver is listed on the US Stock Exchange. Now, This shows the global appeal that a South Korean company is having.
Not only Naver Webtoon, but the Webtoon industry in general made $4.7 billion in 2021, and it's projected to grow to $60.1 billion by 2030. And Naver's Webtoon, which is the market leader, has around 170 million monthly active users from more than 150 countries. The Webtoon, or South Korea-made Webtoons, has already seen quite a bit of success in the North American market, in the Asian market, Southeast Asian market. And so we do expect profitability in those areas for sure. And that coupled with a global popularity of South Korean content, such as Korean dramas, movies, and music, there is the success model of Naver's Webtoon seems feasible in the next couple of years.
That's Jen Moon, a journalist from Seoul. Now, let's also look at the other story that's been making news in the markets, and that's about the Japanese currency yen, which again held at a lower level against the dollar. It fell to its lowest since 1986 today. Our Singapore business reporter Mariko Oi was watching as the yen slid earlier today and explained what is driving the drop in its value.
So the Japanese yen, it's been hitting the lowest level in 38 years today. In fact, it has been weakening for quite some time now. It's down about 12% against the US dollar. And it's mainly because of the difference in the cost of borrowing between the United States and Japan. As you know, Japan's interest rates are still close to zero, even though the Bank of Japan, the country's central bank, ended its negative rates policy back in March. And they're not in a rush to raise interest rates anytime yet, while, of course, the Federal Reserve has been aggressively raising rates since the end of the pandemic. And when the interest rates are higher, they tend to attract more investments and increases the value and demand for the currency. And therefore, the US dollar has been strengthening and the Japanese yen has been weakening.
BBC's Mariko explaining what's happening with the Japanese currency yen. Emma Wall is still with us. Emma, this has also affected other Asian currencies.
Yeah, it has. So aggregate Bloomberg Asia FX index has fallen to its lowest level for nearly 2 years. And the contagion effect of the yen has hurt a number of other currencies across the region, including Indonesia, Vietnam, India. I mean, the interesting thing here is the yen has been propped up by the Bank of Japan in recent months. So just last month, actually, from April the 26th to May the 29th, the Bank of Japan spent 62.2 billion US dollars propping up the yen, which is more than it spent in the entirety of 2002. But not all of the other emerging Asia countries that have been hit by the contagion today have those kind of reserves. So China does, but a number of smaller nations don't. So while Japan can step in to support the yen, some other countries won't have that same ability to support their currencies from their reserves.
And it is extremely worrying because exports, though, gain from it, but imports of food and fuel for many of these economies will be now getting more expensive. Emma Wall, Head of Investment Analysis and Research at Hargreaves Lansdown, thank you so much for joining us as we've been talking. Junko Kim, founder and CEO of Webtoon, the Korean webcomics company that we talked about earlier, he's rung the opening bell for Nasdaq. Now, moving with that to more music that can be seen in the UK's biggest music festival, Glastonbury, which is underway. 200,000 music fans are turning up to enjoy acts such as Coldplay, Dua Lipa and Shania Twain. But what does that mean for the small businesses providing for the revelers? Our reporter Keith Adams has been finding that out.
The sun is out here at Glastonbury Festival. And I'm standing in front of the famous Pyramid Stage where Dua Lipa and Coldplay will be performing this weekend. They're among many other music stars on the bill. Festival goers are turning up and they are pitching their tents in the fields just behind me. And there's a sort of buzz of anticipation in the air. This is the UK's most famous festival and it's known for its friendly atmosphere as much as the music. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
My name's Chris.
And what's your name?
I'm Sophia.
Okay, you two. This is not the usual festival question. How much money do you think you're going to spend this weekend?
Ooh.
Probably £300 each.
So, yeah, £300 each, which works out, I think, at about $400, something like that.
Yeah.
Is that a concern for you?
No, we kind of budget it into our spending on an annual basis. We set money aside for holidays.
You did say that you're happy that payday was before, didn't you? Yeah. But we've heard that they're not allowed to make... that they don't do it to make a profit, do they?
Well, so the festival's not for profit, and I think they require a lot of the small businesses not to charge too much for people, have affordable options.
So does the ethos of the festival, you know, the fact that it gives so much money to charity, does that affect your thinking in coming here?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and who are you looking forward to seeing?
I'm a big Keane fan and Dua Lipa.
Would it be sad if I said the Sugar Babes?
Dearie me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Now, to the left of the stage in front of me is one of the sort of makeshift roads that lead to the other stages, and it's lined with stalls selling food, clothes, supplies, souvenirs, and those businesses can pay tens of thousands of dollars to pitch there for just a few days. To find out why, I spoke to Lois. She runs a company called Food Envy and has a truck here selling chicken wings and halloumi fries.
This is now our fourth year. We actually, our first year was in 2019. Then obviously we had the 2 year break with COVID, and then the past 3 years. And actually we've been extremely lucky with the weather. But for yeah, so Glastonbury is our main event of the year. It makes a huge difference in kind of how we run our business.
Does it cost a lot to be here?
Yeah, so the overheads are massive, but we just know that out of all the shows that we used to do, Glastonbury's the only one that's now worth it for us, because we just can't guarantee that people are going to go to those local shows in comparison to such a big event like this. And Glastonbury really support us by not putting too many trader stands, not making sure that there's a huge amount of competition. With food prices going up so massively and pitch fees going up for overheads for everybody, Glastonbury's the only one that's worth it for us.
And that inflation, it's not easy for you to pass on those costs to the consumers.
No, exactly. People don't expect to come to a festival and have to pay £20, £25 for a meal. They expect that in a sit-down restaurant. And inflation has made a massive difference to what we can charge for a chicken wing.
And do you get a chance to see any of the music when you're here?
Yeah, so we do work ourselves hard, I'm not going to lie. We've got a team of 10 with all of us. But the guys get time to go off and see. They pick who they want to go and see, manage the shifts and, yeah, have a little wander around wearing all the sun cream possible.
That was BBC's Keith Adams at Glastonbury Festival. You've been with World Business Report. More on these stories, especially the US presidential debate, on our sister program, Business Matters. So do tune in at midnight GMT. For now, thank you from our entire team. Namaste.
Sommer, Sonne, sowas von besonders. Jetzt die coolen Mercedes-Benz Sommerhits entdecken. Über 4000 attraktive Vorführ- und Geschäftswagen aus unserem Bestand. Von A-Klasse bis V-Klasse, von Cabriolet bis SUV. Alle kurzfristig verfügbar, alle zu Top-Konditionen, alle für Sie bereit. Sommer, Sonne, Sommerhits. Nur bei Ihrer Mercedes-Benz-Niederlassung vor Ort.